fever.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Hope LeFaber, and I represent the appellant Pedro Castillo. At council table with me is Mr. Andrew McGowan, who represents co-appellant Frank Rodriguez. And with the court's permission, since we have one joint issue, I would just speak to that first. Concerning the joint issue, the government has conceded error and requested the same relief that we've requested. We ask the court to remand for resentencing with instructions that the district court strike the restitution orders in this case and order that the buy money, the $3,000, be paid as a special condition of supervised release to begin when the appellants begin serving their term of supervised release and that no interest accrue. With that, with the court's permission, I would move to actually the last issue, the issue of the jury instructions, because if this court finds on the appellant's behalf on that issue, one would not even reach the issue of the sufficiency of the evidence. I submit, Your Honors, that the jury instruction given on count six in this case was confusing and misled the jury and failed to define for the jury the essential elements of the crime of 924C. First of all, there was basically the judge just read the statute. He never defined the elements of the crime. He never advised the jury that for purposes of a conviction under 924C, mere presence of a gun is insufficient. He further failed to...
Isn't in furtherance pretty intuitive? What do you have to add to that?
I don't think it's intuitive at all, Your Honor. I think it requires an enumeration of factors which would constitute in furtherance, and especially in this case, Your Honor, it's not intuitive because even the government fails to understand it, and the government appellee, in its brief, enumerated all the in furtherance criteria that would have been relevant had 924C been charged in connection with count one, the conspiracy. So I think it's a very complicated issue that's not at all intuitive. The government in its, I'm sorry for saying the government all the time, appellee cites all the factors relating to the events that took place on June the 7th, which all related to count one, the conspiracy count, in support of its argument regarding in furtherance here. And I think the fact that a trained attorney is arguing to this court factors which legally are incorrect, they are not relevant. Count six charged in furtherance of the drug trafficking crime in count five. Therefore, only the facts relevant to what took place on June the 20th are relevant. Furthermore, the government appellee in its brief states that government's proposed instruction 29 was in fact given. The court never gave that instruction, and I don't know why appellee herein tells this court that it was. There is no citation to the record. That instruction, government's proposed 29, was never given.
What instruction was presented? Was there instruction presented or suggested that would cover the details of what in furtherance is?
What instruction was presented?
Yeah, well, what was given and what should have been given, and was that what should have been given presented as a potential instruction?
Okay, answer to your question, Your Honor, is that the following was read to the jury, or was stated to the jury by the judge. Moving on to count two, to sustain the charge of possessing a firearm in furtherance of a drug crime, as charged in count six, the government must prove the following propositions. First, that the defendant committed the crime of possession with intent to distribute a controlled substance, as charged in count five. Second, that the defendant knowingly possessed the firearm in furtherance of the crime. That's it. Now, proposed, government's proposed 29 is found at, I believe it's page 20 of Appellee's brief. And that was, possession of a firearm is in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime if the possession furthers, advances, or helps forward the drug activity that is being conducted. And the third answer to Your Honor's question is that the defense counsel, which was not myself, thankfully, did not submit any proposed instructions. Now, this proposed instruction was submitted, government's 29, was submitted by the government. Both sides failed to object at the close of the court's charge, and the court failed to even ask.
Object to the fact that it wasn't read?
Yes. And the court never had a sidebar asking whether there are any objections. And I submit that the fact that the government even proposed this instruction underscores the importance of giving this instruction. And therefore, it went to an essential element of the crime, and without which, really, the propriety of the proceeding was compromised, because it is entirely possible that the jury based its verdict on the facts relevant to the conspiracy charge, as the Appellee's counsel did in its brief to this court.
Are you claiming this is plain error, then?
Yes, Your Honor, I do, because it goes to an essential element of the crime here. And in this case, it's especially egregious, because in this case, the events relating to Count 5 took place 2 weeks later. During the two-week period from June 7th to, I believe it was June 20th, when this arrest occurred, nothing took place. No law enforcement officer witnessed appellant in this apartment with any gun. No one witnessed appellant with a gun at any time during the entire course of the conspiracy. So that there are a number of facts which blend into the insufficiency argument, which I'll proceed with now, make the failure to define in furtherance in any way, shape, or form more egregious in this particular case. It's not like the cases cited in Appellee's brief, where the facts relating to the possession and the actual apprehension of the appellant took place at one and the same time, like in Luciano. In this case, there is no activity and no evidence relating to appellant and this apartment where the drugs were found for 2 weeks. The drugs were found in a rear bedroom closet, and there's no evidence in the record as to any drug activity in that rear bedroom. The evidence relating to the conspiracy, which I submit is irrelevant for purposes of a finding of guilt on count 6, related to activities in the kitchen while they were cooking.
Wasn't there some evidence that this individual, while cooking or while the informant was there, I did go into that general area of the apartment to procure drugs to give to people?
Yeah, Your Honor, there was. That's an excellent point. There was some evidence that on June the 7th, while cooking, the doorbell rang and appellant walked in the direction. There was just one long hallway and no specification as to length or what was back there. He left the kitchen area and walked in that direction. There's no evidence that he entered that bedroom at all, and no evidence in the record regarding the bedroom. The drugs were found in the rafters of the ceiling behind drywall.
It was kind of an established stash place, wasn't it?
Pardon me?
How did you get into those rafters?
I think that the drywall was loosened.
Yeah. So this was kind of a stash place.
Definitely. I mean, drugs were there, and a gun was found 4 to 5 feet away. But the problem is that the government in this case failed to establish an exclusive possession of this apartment by appellant. They had some documents in the record regarding some addresses and some bills. They did not prove exclusive possession. And in order to prove possession, they need to prove not only dominion and control, but they need to prove that Mr. Castillo knew that that gun was there and intended to use it in furtherance of the drug trafficking crime. In addition, the gun was arguably inoperable. The testimony was conflicting on that issue. The gun was a very large one, unlike guns that are used in connection with drug activity. There was no evidence by anyone in this case that ever saw appellant with a gun, and there was no evidence that he ever threatened anyone with a gun, and that there's no evidence that he was ever at this apartment since June the 6th. So for all of these reasons, the instruction that mere presence of a firearm alone was particularly important in this case, because it is not only a 922G case. This is a 924C, possession in furtherance. So mere possession alone is insufficient. And there's no evidence here of knowledge.
Okay, thank you, Ms. LeFevre. Ms. Moeller? Noller, I'm sorry.
May it please the court, counsel. The jury instruction that Castillo wanted given in this case was, in fact, given. At the record at page 544, the jury was instructed, quote, possession of a firearm is in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime if the possession furthers, advances, or helps forward the drug activity that is being conducted, end quote. The jury was not given an enumeration of any factors, but quite frankly, there is no case law in this or any other circuit that requires such an enumeration. And in fact, the case that Castillo relies on to suggest that such an enumeration would be appropriate is a Fifth Circuit case, Ceballos-Torres. And in that case, the court merely suggests that there is a series of factors that, quote, might be helpful, end quote, in determining whether the possession of a firearm is in furtherance of the possession of drugs. So the instruction that she wants actually was given to the court. Now, it was not given time and time again. So, for example, every time the phrase in furtherance of is used in the jury instruction, it was not given. But that is exactly the way jury instructions work. If we defined a term every single time it was used, they would become unwieldy. For example, the term cocaine base is used frequently throughout these instructions. It is defined the very first time that it is used and not thereafter.
Is this instruction set out in your brief?
Yes, it is.
What page is that? Do you know?
It's at, I believe it's at page 20. It's at page 20. It was proposed government instruction 29, and it was given in the record at page 544 of the record.
Okay.
With respect to the sufficiency of the evidence, this jury did have sufficient evidence to draw the reasonable inference that Mr. Castillo was possessing the sawed-off shotgun in furtherance of the possession of the crack cocaine that was found in the ceiling rafters next to the drugs. First of all, he kept the shotgun with the crack cocaine. The ceiling has two rafters that are about 4 to 5 feet from each other. The drug paraphernalia, baggies, scales, weights, and the drugs are on one rafter, and the rafter next to it is where the sawed-off shotgun and the ammunition is found. At the sentencing in this case, and also at trial, there was evidence that was put in that the sawed-off shotgun was operable, that it could easily be used by Mr. Castillo if he wanted to do that. Second, it makes no sense that the June 7th activity is irrelevant to this case. It is extremely relevant because the jury needs to consider the facts of the drug possession along with the facts of the gun possession to make its determination. On June 7th, Mr. Castillo went back to, he went down the only hallway in this apartment to retrieve from his stash the cocaine that he then sold on that day. In the same place as the stash of drugs is the gun that he's using and keeping to protect that stash. So the fact that the only place that the drugs were found in the apartment on June 20th is the same place that he goes to sell the drugs on June 7th is relevant, particularly because under Ceballos-Torres and the other cases, the other 924C cases that are relevant, it's a totality of the circumstances consideration. Some of the other cases that we did cite, for example, Ceballos-Torres itself, cited by both parties, shows that you don't have to have the deal on the same day that the gun is found. Ceballos-Torres was actually approached by agents who were doing an immigration check at his house. There was no drug deal that was happening on the day that he was arrested for possessing a gun and also possessing drugs in his home. So it's simply not the case that you have to have only activity on the day that, that the possession also occurs. In addition,
possessing a gun in furtherance?
Yes. Ceballos-Torres, the jury found that he was possessing the gun in furtherance of the possession of drugs that were also found in his apartment. And that's the same case we have here. In addition, there was evidence that the weapon that was at use in this case was modified. I don't think there's any dispute in the record at all that it's not a hunting gun. It's not a collector's edition. It is a sawed-off shotgun that is maintained to protect the drugs.
Well,
the
jury, that's an illegal gun anyway, isn't it?
It is. He was not charged with that. It's not one of the counts in the indictment, but it would be, yes. The jury also heard expert testimony that Castillo and other drug dealers frequently keep their drugs or their guns near their drug stash in their apartment and in other locations to protect the drugs, and we would maintain that that is what he was doing here, that the gun was maintained next to the drugs because he was advancing the possession. In other words, he was trying to protect his guns, or I'm sorry, his drugs and his stash. I want to address just very briefly the third point. It's true that we agree that the case should be sent back to Judge Holderman, but not for a full resentencing, as counsel suggests, just for a modification of the judgment and commitment order.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Nolan. Now, Ms. LaFaber, your time had expired, but if you want a minute for rebuttal, you may have it.
Your Honors, Appellee has given this court the very best reason to reverse and remand and grant a new trial in this case. Ms. Noller said that that charge that was requested, and she said at page 20 of her brief, she never cited where the court gave that charge. What she cited was the proposed charge that was never given. But she said she read to the court from page 544 of the charge to the court. That was the charge to the jury. That was the charge that the judge gave on count 4, upon which the defendant was in fact acquitted. That was the charge relating to the possession on a different date. And the judge on that count 4, it was a 924C count, apprised the jury or defined in furtherance, and the defendant was acquitted on that count. So that underscores the importance of defining in furtherance. Next, Ms. Noller said that that it is wrong that the evidence relating to the conspiracy is relevant on count 6. It is not, because count 6 of the indictment specifically charges use and possession in connection with the crime charged in count 5. The government drafted the indictment. If the government wanted to charge 924C use or possession in connection with the conspiracy, it could have so charged. Count 6 defines 924C in connection with the crime charged in count 5. That's why the date of June 20th is the only relevant date, not the conduct relating to the conspiracy. She's also...
Okay. Thank you. Your time is up.
Okay, thank you.
And you were appointed, were you not?
No, not.
You weren't appointed?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you anyway. And Mr.